Welcome to the Inside the Ring podcast, and we return in episode 8. We got the Jack, and it's sponsored by DraftKings Sportsbook, presented by InsideTheRink.com, your one-stop shop for all your NHL, ECHL, AHL news, insight, and analysis. Just go to InsideTheRink.com, get your extensive hockey coverage and podcasts like this one. Maddie, Smitty, and Conrad Jack, as we return after a small hiatus.
Yeah, taking a little break. Whatever.
Just a wee little break, eh, boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was seven episodes, and we were like, whew, we're spent. Yeah. So we had to wait till episode 8 came
out. Yeah, we had to wait for Conrad to
we had the young guy in there.
Yeah, we had to wait for Conrad to actually make it a half-decent show. So now we have someone that actually knows hockey, and we could talk to him about goings-on around the league.
Yeah, oh, Smitty, that's a stretch saying I know hockey.
Okay, that's my bad. But we'll, We'll fight through it. It's a team game. Yeah, it's a team game.
Absolutely. Tons of action, tons of NHL news. Of course, we haven't been on in about 2 months, so we could talk about a ton of stuff. But right now, let's talk Matt Rempe.
Yeah.
He gets a line brawl going against the New Jersey Devils. He's played 14 games. He's averaged about 5.5 minutes of ice time, and he has 69 penalty minutes. This guy is like Slapshot 2024, Conrad.
Oh, well, I mean, if you take a look, well, I just want to go off of the stats first and foremost with Matt Rempe. His three games against the Devils, he's been ejected all three games. I think he has like barely over 5 minutes of total ice time.
That is tremendous. I mean, ejected in every game. I mean, that's just it's doing your job to the fullest right there. He's just going out there and being the enforcer that the Rangers want him to be, I suppose.
Yeah.
Bad hits, I mean, the whole nine yards.
1982.
Yeah.
I don't know this guy. I don't even know if he can play. I think he can play a little bit. He has a goal and an assist anyway. So he has done something, but if you're watching on YouTube, you see the quote on getting tossed. He says, I thought I was going to have a good 5 minutes in the penalty box with the fellas. We were going to be cuddled up in there, getting cozy and having a good time. I had no idea that was a rule. I was like, dang it. My total ice time didn't go up that game. He said it was a real banger. Rempe.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Sure. Everybody was fighting. So, I mean, they were kind of banging each other around.
What caught me off guard with all of that is how quick VC and Lazar went at it. It's like the puck dropped and both of them are like just bear hugging each other, just chucking them. And I see everyone else on the ice like, okay, let's give the crowd a show. And just VC and Lazar is like, I hate you. We're going to fight. And it was,
yeah,
that five fight line, bro. Just like good old time hockey. And that's the first time since like 2014 that I can remember with the Canucks and Flames brawl that something like that has happened right off the drop.
Right. Well, there was a Stars Bruins.
Stars Bruins.
What's his face? Avery.
Steve Ott and Avery. Sean Avery was on the on the Stars team at that point, but I don't know if he fought anyone because he wasn't really a fighter. He was more of an agitator, get in your face, stir things up, and then get out of the way and let other people handle the pugilistic aspect. So, that was a bunch of penalty minutes. I don't think it was a full on line brawl off the start of the game though. I think there was a couple guys that fought, and then it just kind of escalated as the game went along.
What I think we're referencing is the game where it was three fights in 4 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just remember Jack Edwards going nuts on the clip, just like, oh, we got another one off the draw. Little things like that. It's like, and the crowd loves it.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
Like you go
I think they do. And the question on YouTube is, do NHL fans want fighting in games? I think they absolutely do. And I don't think there's going to be much fighting, and the league is actually threatened to take it out and all that stuff. But there is some room for it. Now, this might be a little over the top, what's happening now with Rempe, but there is actually a role for fighting, and a lot of it's the policing of the game with the players, and that still needs to remain, in my opinion. Or people are just going to take shots, and I feel like people take more and more shots recently. And it's probably because there's less enforcers in the game.
Yeah, I think the enforcers don't really or can't really control it without, you know, fighting. You can't right. have the, you can't have just guys running around and killing people and not have fighting in the game. I think, you know, if they try to legislate it out of the game, it's just asking for trouble. And, you know, there'll be longer suspensions and guys taking cheap shots. And I think it needs to be there because, you know, the refs miss some things. And then there's, you know, if guys get hurt or stuff like that, like there needs to be some kind of a payback in that, in those type of situations. So I feel like, you know, fighting has to be there to, you know, it allows the, it allows both teams to kind of answer for what happened and then move on. And without that, right. you know, that stuff can linger for much longer.
The interesting thing about Rempe is that the Rangers are good, like really good.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're just like a bottom feeder team that needs some entertainment value, throwing a just a ham and egg in there, firing shots at people. Like they're really good. So it's, I find it interesting that this guy is just kind of roaming around with 5.5 minutes of ice time, getting all sorts of penalty minutes on a team that's excellent.
Yeah. Does you wonder, does a guy like that, you know, create more space for the likes of Panarin and Kreider and Zibanejad and so forth? Does a guy like that kind of open up the ice, knowing that, you know, if somebody takes a run at one of those guys, there's going to be repercussions for it? You know, that's yeah. what the other role of, you know, having a guy like that on your team is, maybe, you know, your creative players get a little more, you know, open ice and don't have to worry so much about getting suckered or run or whatever. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, it's it's interesting. I think the Rangers are, you know, should be a favorite to potentially get to the finals and win the cup. I mean, they're really good. Panarin's had a great year again. So, but Rempe is just kind of there. And in the playoffs, I mean, is that doesn't really work. So does he even make the lineup heading into the postseason?
Yeah, I don't think he does.
I would say that's a... I think that's something that you got to look at the team, because you don't want a guy like Matt Rempe coming into the game, getting a couple of shifts in, and then all of a sudden he's gone and you're down a forward. And now you're right. gonna play with 11 guys and double shift another guy. Uh-huh. So it's like, do you run the risk of wearing your top guys down because they're playing more now with mm-hmm. Rempe being out? It's like a lot of factors that you have to take into consideration, especially with Rempe chicken winging guys like, or guys off the Devils. I can't remember who he chicken winged, but just little things like that, because other teams are going to start going after him. Mm-hmm. And it's like a snowball effect of what's going to happen when this guy does these sort of things and just.
Right. Yeah.
This is chaos.
Yeah.
I think maybe with it might be matchup based. You know, you could see him going into the lineup against a team like Florida or something if they happen to meet, because of the antics of some of the guys from Florida and the toughness kind of they have. But then, you know, with a team like the Bruins, you know, would you put Rempe in the lineup to, you know, knock around with the likes of Jesper Boqvist and stuff? Like, I don't think he would. You know, I think the Rangers have enough speed and skill and you know, other things on their team that they wouldn't need to have a guy like that in the lineup, you know, in a series like, you know, if they face Boston, for example.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes postseason time. All right, Vancouver Canucks. This is a team that's been pretty good this year, potentially unable to capitalize on potential playoff success, Conrad.
Yeah, so I take a look at this team. I also fired off a few tweets about this and got myself into some hot water because my team got on a nice long losing streak, but it's not the point. Is I've watched the Canucks from the start of the season and they had a bit of a dip. They kind of came back, played a few games, and looked like they had their mojo, and then they acquire Elias Lindholm well before the trade deadline. And now you have this team that's kind of struggling to keep afloat. Like, I think since acquiring Lindholm, they're just barely above .500, which isn't good because he's supposed to be an impact guy and he's your third line center. Going into the playoffs, you have guys who should make the lineup who aren't going to make the lineup because they're going to get pushed down the depth charts. And I watched Vancouver. I think they're frauds because of their lack of just finishing. They don't have that it factor. Like, yes, you got Pettersson and Besser, but like, you don't got a guy who's going to go in there and take control of the game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Here's the thing about Lindholm is that Smitty and I talked about on the Bruins podcast. We didn't really want Lindholm on the Bruins because he really hadn't been producing that much. And Smitty was definitely someone who just would rather not use the capital to get him and would not like to extend him.
Yeah, I feel like...
I mean, especially for that price.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the price is coming down. Like every game he plays, the price is coming down lower and lower. I mean, he'll be an effective third line center, but you know, he wanted 9 in change from Calgary. That's not the price of a third line center. So, you know, if he's going to not really produce and he's going to be getting less minutes, he could be a suitable third line center, face off guy, and put up 40 points. That's nice, but you're certainly not getting top of the market money for that. And I think you're right, Conrad. I think since he's gone to Vancouver, they've kind of haven't really been able to find where he fits well with that team. And he's just not really producing like they thought he would. I think they thought he would come in and really give a lift to their bottom six and really kind of stabilize and energize that group. And he really hasn't done it. So they may be in a little bit of trouble. I mean, they have a pretty deep team and they have some defense and Demko is really good. So, they'll be okay, but the West is stacked. I mean, there's a lot of great teams in the West. And if they're, playing at less than their optimum level going into the postseason, they're going to be in for a rude awakening here, in one of the early rounds.
And Lindholm's out now with a hand and wrist injury, and he's out for a little bit of extended period of time. So it could be into the playoffs that he's out. So that kind of backfired on them to give him any sort of balance or stability there with the addition of Lindholm, and who knows what happens to him at the end of the year. I mean, like you said, he might have to do a prove it deal with a team he might have to do a bridge deal because he just hasn't been the type of player that people thought he would be. He was white hot in the beginning of the year. His name was everywhere. And now I'm not sure how many teams will be interested in him at any type of price like you're talking about. I mean, a third line center, you're talking maybe $4 million a year, like not 9.
No.
That's just ridiculous. So be interested to see what Lindholm can do. And if he actually gets playoff time, whether wrist injuries are funny. I mean, that's your whole game. That's your hands. You can't lose your hands as a center. Can't face off, can't score, can't shoot. I mean, that's everything. So...
I think also with the price they gave up for him, Kuzmenko and Hunter Brustevich alone could have been enough to get him if that's the role they knew they were going to play him in. But right. You added a first round pick and 2 other pretty decent pieces to the deal.
Yikes. So. Wow.
I look at Winnipeg and all that, and I see what they acquired, which we'll get into right away. But I see the market for centers, and I'm like, that's not... Like, yes, you're going out way ahead of the deadline, so the price might be far, far higher than what you wanted. But
Now they've been figuring out the right line combinations, Conrad. Is that right?
Yeah. See, I got a little mad last night, and because Rick Bonus seems to continuously get back to having Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele play together, and it's a line that keeps getting caved in. They went 8. Or they got outscored 8-0 in a 6-game losing streak, and just defensively, they were awful. So Bones finally says, you know what? We're playing LA. We gotta snap this losing streak. And he plays Nick Ehlers with Scheifele and Vilardi, bumping Kyle Connor down to the second left wing position with Sean Monahan, who they only gave up a first for, and what's his name? I haven't picked up, but I should have this memorized. Perfetti. And now you have two first lines on a team that shouldn't have the depth that they do. With Niederreiter being down, it's like, okay, we're gonna bump Toffoli down. And we have all this interchangeable depth because Iafallo's gone from the first line all the way to the fourth. And he's effective wherever he goes. You got Lowry who will step into the second line or even first line center position. It's so much interchangeable depth that this team has that if they want to be the team to beat in the playoffs, or sorry, I said that backwards. If they want to beat the teams like Colorado, who are the teams you want to beat, you need to have this depth, and you need your strength needs to be your scoring and everything that you have going on the wings. You need the finishing touches. While I don't believe Winnipeg has that with this lineup, they have that, like the interchangeable depth. They'll change on the fly. Sometimes they're reluctant, but if you look at the roster as a whole, you have 16 guys who can get put into the lineup. So,
yeah, I feel like the depth of Winnipeg is definitely one of their strengths. And you need that in the playoffs because usually, and we've talked about this before, the top lines, the top six guys kind of cancel each other out. And then it's left to the depth guys to win series and win games. You know, it's the depth scoring usually that leads to victories in series. And then Winnipeg also has tremendous goaltending, which, you know, the Avalanche don't really have. Edmonton doesn't really have. So, you know, you're looking at a team like Dallas, a team like Vegas, maybe, that can match goaltending wise. But, I think with the depth and the goaltending that Winnipeg has, there'll certainly be a tough out, in the playoffs.
They could. And the only problem is that they're staring down the barrel of a Colorado first round series, which is really hard. And like you said, if offensively they're not getting some balance throughout the lineup, Colorado could score goals. I mean, Colorado is excellent talent, good offensive talent, and that might be a really bad matchup for someone like Winnipeg. Maybe Winnipeg can hang in, but I think that Scheifele, you know, there's no surprise that Scheifele and Connor would have one of the worst defensive pairings there. I mean, they're just not known for. Scheifele is widely regarded as a bad defensive player. So, you know, it's, you definitely have to separate those two. We've talked about with the Bruins, with Pastrnak and Marchand, like they turn the puck over a little bit too much together to really play together.
Yeah.
So it's just too many turnovers, too much, you know, just too much unbalanced play. The same can be true for Scheifele and that group, because it just doesn't work, especially in the playoffs. You can't be giving up odd man rushes and more offensive chances, especially to a team like Colorado. So, John Tortorella is in the news again. And tell you what, I'd love Torts to be the Bruins, and I'm a big Bruins fan. We host a Bruins podcast. I'd love Torts to be the Bruins coach. I would. I mean, I just love coaches like Torts. He says it like it is. We've had that with Bruce Cassidy in Boston before, but Tortorella would take it to another level, and he calls guys out, and he calls his team out, and so forth, and he does it with such honesty. And recently, after a game, he talked about how the Flyers, who I believe, has completely squeezed everything out of. Like, this is a team that should not be where it is. It's in playoff position. But he says that there's a different level, which is true, as you get to the end of the year, trying to get that last wild card spot or whatever the case, and getting into the playoffs and succeeding. And Tortorella had this to say after a post game recently.
John, it seemed like after Sandheim scores that goal early in the second period, you guys had all the momentum, and then things kind of came to a stop. What was your assessment of where things were?
Soft. One guy played, the goalie.
How encouraging is it that he came in like that cold and was able to?
Terrific. He's the only guy that played.
Is that pretty surprising? Because considering you said, like, you trust your team, you don't have to tell them or remind them, and then they do that.
You're finding things out here, okay, when these games are at a whole different plane, okay? It's still regular season, right? But it's a whole different plane. So we're finding things out.
You talked after the last game about that was kind of what you felt like wasn't a great performance. Are you concerned at all that tonight it kind of lingered again, that you just said it was a soft game, per se?
Not the whole game and not the whole group. There are certain people that they don't have a clue how to play, or just don't have it in them to play in these type of situations. And this is why I'm glad we're playing them. I'm glad because we have to figure things out as far as what we're going to become as a team here. That was embarrassing in the second period for the Philadelphia Flyer uniform, the way we played. Embarrassing. High marks as far as how we came back in the third. Some guys.
With regards to Ivan, why did you make the decision to bring him in, and how impressed were you in his performance tonight?
I wanted to bring him in. It just didn't look right with Urs, and I'm totally impressed. I put him in a hell of a spot. And he's the only goddamn player that played in the second period.
You made any update on Sean Couturier yet?
No.
You guys now have a couple days off before you start back-to-back. Is that kind of what you were talking about over? Some guys need some rest, or is that you just want?
Yeah, we can talk about that too. Rest, this, that, the other thing. If you don't have enough balls to play in these type of games, rest doesn't do us any good. Doesn't do us any good.
He's had a hair across his ass with Couturier, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Couturier just, yeah, I mean, maybe he's not bought in or you know, maybe. Was getting a little pushback from him, or, you know, he's the captain, so he's the one that he kind of has to drill down on to kind of get the rest of the guys to fall in line, say, look, I'm gonna treat Sean Couturier this way, so the rest of you, you know, assholes better fall in line, because, you know, or you'll sit for a long period of time, you know? But I love Torts. I love his honesty, but... And he's a hell of a coach, like you said, squeezing every ounce of everything that he could get from this Flyers team. But he is definitely one of those coaches that has a shelf life. Like, you get to a certain point, and everybody's like, this fucking guy won't get off my back, for crying out loud. Can somebody hire someone? Can we get someone else in here who's not going to rip me a new one every time I turn the puck over at the blue line?
Reminds me of the Ryan Kessler interview on Spit and Chicklets, where he was just like going at Kessler, stripped him of his A and all that, and then almost fought him in practice pretty much, and he's like, I fucking love it, Kess. I fucking love it. You know, you're gonna get your A back next year, and Kessler's like, you're not gonna be back here next year, and I'm not gonna be back here either. And this is like little things like that. It's like Torts definitely has a shelf life, but there's a reason he has continue to find a job in the league.
Sure. I mean, he gets you there, and then they may even win it maybe next year or whatever. He gets you there, but then after a while, it's just like that's enough. I mean, he's kind of a hot knife through steak. He's just like, kind of after a while, he's just like, okay, dude. But what I love is that was like a post game on a bad one night stand. We just say like, hey, what's the one thing that comes to mind after that performance? Soft. Yeah. That's like, you know, that was just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. I love Torts. I mean, I would love to play for a guy like Torts.
Yeah, me too.
You know, but some people don't, you know, and it's hard nowadays. Obviously players dictate things. We saw it with Cassidy in Boston, like players dictate things, and the coach goes, you can't fire all the players and that type of thing. But Torts has done a great job with that group. And that's a team that I didn't think had any chance of making the playoffs. And here we are, like, just really on the cusp of making it. And it's a scary team because they'll have no expectations and they play hard. Like, he gets them playing hard. And they're a scary team. They get going. They win game one. And all of a sudden, you're in a dogfight. So that's a scary team. All right, Alex Ovechkin is on his way to 895 goals. He sped up a little bit here, and the Caps are actually another team. Completely surprised by the Caps. I thought they were one of the worst teams in the league coming into the season. But Ovi is getting there, and I think he's actually going to get there. He's at 848, so he's about, 46 away from Gretzky.
Yeah, he'll get there. I think he will. He'll play until he gets there. We'll put it that way. He's just out there on the power play, just banging one-timers until he hits it. But he will. He'll get there. And then I think, you know, down the line, you're looking at a guy like Austin Matthews, who we talked to Ardo O'Cal, and he thinks Matthews will pass Ovechkin at some point. And it certainly looks like Matthews is well on his way with, you know, does he have 60 already this year?
Oh, yeah, 63.
63, yeah. So, you know, and, you know, if he starts putting together back-to-back, you know, 55, 60, 65 goal seasons, it's only a matter of time before Matthews catches Ovechkin and Gretzky, and you know, he's still 26 yeah, I was gonna old. Say he's still he's very 26. Young. So yeah. He's got a long time in front of him, and it's just whether or not he plays long enough to get up into that stratosphere.
Right. I agree. And that's you know, there's only three people ever who scored over 800 goals. And I tweeted out on our Bruins Brenda's account a while back that there were a few, like Nathan MacKinnon and Matthews and Pastrnak, who are in the 300, mid-300s range, at under 30 years old, who all have a chance. But like you said, longevity is the key. I mean, with the money that's in the game and those types of things, the guys are guys really going to play till the 36, 37, 38. You know, there are some in the league right now. You know, the Zach Parises and Goligoskis and guys who have been around quite a bit and played a long time in the league. But the guys like Matthews and Pastrnak play that long, you know, in the league. Who knows? But definitely have a chance. And so do you think, okay, Conrad, I'll ask you this. Does Ovi do it with the Caps? Do they, I would assume he would, and the Caps would want him to, but I mean, he's a guy who every single year would be a candidate to kind of deal for a playoff run, wouldn't he?
Yes, and I think the Capitals have done a good job at keeping the team relatively competitive because they're fighting for a wild card spot at the moment. And like it's a wild duck chase right now. But with the way that Ovechkin kind of started the season and everyone's like, oh, he's 38, he's slowing down. And now he's picking it right up near the end of the season because, well, one, they're in the playoff hunt, and two, you have the team to go on this run. Like, you have Pacioretty, Sandin, McMichael. You have a bunch of young guys, and then a lot of really strong leaders, too, to go on top of it. So it's like you have to look at the team that they have put around him, and you also have to look at Ovechkin's play, because 846 or 848 goals later in the league, and he's still in that one position in the power play, still scoring from that one angle.
Yeah. I mean, one thing about Ovi that's impressive is the fact that he'll play physically. He always has. And he is tremendously durable. I mean, my God, he's like a machine. And he's still out there playing at a fairly high level. And I mean, he may be a little bit more one dimensional than he was, but there was a time where he was banging bodies and playing physically and having a different impact in the game than just scoring goals on the power play. And that may be how it ends, like Smitty said, just kind of being specialty guy. And that's fine. It's interesting that the Capitals have been able to, because I really thought this was a Cal Ripken type of situation where all of a sudden, like, you're just waiting this guy out and your roster is struggling through it. And you just, at the end of it, it's just your bare bones. You're all done. Like, you have to completely rebuild after this. Like, you're selling your soul for this. But it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems to be that they've done a pretty good job of staying relevant and staying in the playoff chase. Whether or not they make it, you know, who knows? But at least they've been able to remain relevant in the playoff chase. All right, moves that we think should have or should not have made at the trade deadline. Conrad, anything come to mind for you as far as who should have made?
I kind of alluded with the whole Vancouver thing is the Elias Lindholm trade is one that they should not have made. Mm-hmm. And I feel so strongly about that. And I'm pretty sure my trade deadline grade piece, I think I gave them a D. Like I was very rough to them. And then San Jose also comes to mind with some boneheaded ass moves, trading Thomas Hertl with 2 third-round picks, which are basically second round picks for how bad the team is going to be over the next 5 years, for their best prospect in Vegas and a first round pick. That's basically a second round fucking pick. Like, what are we doing in San Jose? It's a clear F on their part. So I got two teams that I want to rip an asshole about, but here we are.
Yeah, I think Mike Greer in San Jose probably should be fired for the way that he handled this trade deadline. I don't think there's any two ways about it. I mean,
he should have been fired for negotiating.
Yeah, the trade hurdle. I mean, it's
that much even cap retention on it.
Right. Exactly. Right. The retention back and then not getting enough. It's it's a fireable offense, in my opinion. And then, you know, some moves that people did make at the deadline, you look at, you know, Vegas gets Hurdle, you know, Edmonton gets some pieces, you know, Colorado with the trade for, Buffalo, who was it?
Middlestad
yeah. for Byram. That was a good move for them right. to give them some more depth. So you know the teams in the West kind of loaded up there for mm-hmm. for the stretch run, and it's going to be a battle. And then you know Tampa and you know makes a minor move, and Florida makes a minor move with Duclair, and you know Carolina. Makes a move. So there were some good moves made by some of the contenders in the East. You know, Boston gets the Peak trade, Peak, and I think that was a little bit of an underrated signing. He's kind of fit in well with them on their third pair and given them a little bit more physicality and PK work. So it seems like most of the contenders made pretty good little moves, with the exception, like Conrad said, of Vancouver, and and you know, then there's I don't know if the, I mean San Jose obviously was a dumpster fire or whatever, but
fucking
crazy. Yeah, I think that I thought when it happened that the deadline was a pretty good deadline. I thought that teams didn't have a lot of room to take on salaries and had to be creative. And I thought it was going to be a real dud. I really did, but it really wasn't. I thought teams did a really good job of having some creativity, getting enough help. Many teams did. We kind of lamented Boston not getting something a little bit better, maybe a centerman or another scoring winger. But when you look at Maroon, who's now he's going to start playing for them, and that's probably a good move, because they do need some bottom six help. And then the Peak trade was a really good one, as Smitty said. So they actually did some things to really shore themselves up when they didn't have a lot of cap space or any capital to trade. You know, they don't have great prospects. They don't have a lot of high picks, and don't certainly want to give any more of them up. So I thought that was it was a pretty good deadline all around. But the Lindholm thing was, if you could ever see something coming a mile away, it's that Elias Lindholm thing. Like, it's just like, yeah, you could just see it coming, that he just wasn't performing well, wasn't producing well in a real dry spell. And then you make that trade with all that was sent in return. It was just like a head scratcher for me. It's just all the red alerts were there to not do something to that magnitude with Lindholm.
But yeah, I thought, go ahead, Connor.
The thing with that Lindholm trade is, Vancouver, I very strongly believe they're going to get bounced in the first round.
Right.
So you're giving up a pretty decent first round pick on top of some other pretty decent assets for a guy who might not even sniff the playoffs with this team.
Right.
And I thought Carolina really helped themselves with Gensel. He's been really hot since he's been there. Carolina has a lot of good forwards, and he'll fit right in there. And they just got Freddie Anderson back, and you know, with the exception of the Bruins game last night, he's been terrific since he came back. I believe 11-1 before that game, with the goals against under two. So, you know, Carolina is going to be a really tough out, because they're playing well and have, you know, the defensive depth and you know, a really good solid forward group. If they can, you know, figure some things out, as far as, you know, Svechnikov's taking some kind of stupid penalties he did last night. So they need to clean some stuff up, but they'll be a tough out in the East.
But, you know, Vancouver's looking down the barrel of a LA Kings first round matchup, and the Kings are pretty good. And I would favor the Kings in that series. It could either be the Kings or the Preds, looks like. The Preds have been fairly hot. Bruins beat them the other night, but they'd won like 8 out of 9 at home and are really hot. And the Kings are pretty good. Like, either one of those two teams could upset Vancouver in the first round.
The one thing with Nashville, too, is
right.
They went from not having a not so great start to the season, and then the whole thing with the U2 concert and the team outing getting canceled. They went on just an absolute tear.
They did.
I don't know if they're still or no. They're just sniffing up Winnipeg's back for the third central spot. But
right,
Nashville's going to be a very sneaky team when it comes to playoffs.
The Admirals, 92 points.
The Admirals are also a really, really good team. And they have so much depth. It's like, a guy goes down, they got a guy who'll come in and step right into that role. It's no problem for Nashville.
The guy I always thought was really underrated is Philip Forsberg. Like, his 87 points. Like, he's such a good player. They don't really have enough around him ever, but man, he's so good, and he signed to extend with them. And I just think he's an under the radar star for them. Like, no one, people don't give him enough credit for being, if he was on a team in a bigger market or, you know, in a more of a hotbed of hockey, like, man, like, he'd be someone that the league is really, you know, that's really on top of the league. And he's just so, so good. And he kind of makes that team go. Connor McDavid joins Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, and Mario Lemieux as the only players to record 100 assists in a season. Nikita Kucherov has 90. I don't think he's going to get there, but he has 90 this season. But 100 assists for McDavid, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that's pretty good company to be in with Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr. So, you know, he just continues to put up numbers, and now his legacy will be, you know, can he get over the hump and win a cup? All those other guys have multiple Stanley Cups, so he needs to join that elite company if he wants to be mentioned in the same breath as those guys. I mean, you know, he's a tremendous talent, and but he really needs the playoff success now to be mentioned among the greats.
Yeah, I mean, Edmonton Vegas could be the first round matchup, and that's a tough one. Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, Vegas has been dinged up. I mean, Eichel was out for a while. Stone was out for a while. But man, if they can get healthy, if they're fully healthy, that's a tough first round matchup for Edmonton.
Yeah, it is. I think they have 21 or 22 million on long term injured reserve right now. They got guys hanging out just off to the side of the rink there until playoffs roll around, and then you see everybody hop the boards and be like, "All right, boys, let's go."
Salary cap gymnastics.
I mean, hey, it's legal, and everybody kind of jumps on people for doing that, and, you know, cap circumvention and all this stuff. But until somebody closes that loophole, you got to use everything that's available to you in order to field the best team possible to win it. So, you know, Vegas is doing what Tampa did for a long time and some other teams have done to, you know, kind of get around that and have the best team come the playoffs.
Well, I've had this conversation with a few friends too. It's like, if it's there and the league isn't doing anything about it, yes, it might seem like cheating to us because we're fans of other teams.
Right.
But they are doing what the league refuses to kind of put their foot down on.
Sure. 100%. So
if it's there, use it. Yeah. Like, I would love for Winnipeg to do it. I would love for Boston to do it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, Toronto did or tried to do it a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, you got these teams that tried to do it, but you got other teams who are doing it to an extreme, like Tampa with the 18 million goes and wins the cup.
Yeah.
Can't fault them for using what's within.
Right.
I guess I don't want to say the rule book, but technically in the rule book, the LTIR thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the gig. I mean, that's a loophole that you take advantage of for sure. Minnesota Wild forward Ryan Hartman gets 3 games suspension for throwing a stick on the ice from the bench after a game last weekend. The second time he has received supplemental discipline this season, and the third over the past year for Ryan Hartman.
Nobody likes him, I guess, huh? In the league office. What did he piss in George Soros's Cheerios or something?
3 games. Is it because of the multiple infractions? 3 games for throwing your stick?
It has to be. There really can't be any other explanation for that. It's because he was already disciplined once this year or whatever. That has to be the reason. Because throwing your stick off the bench, I mean, sure, that's more like a 10-minute misconduct than, you know, suspension worthy, in my opinion. I don't know. It's like, that's like a, you know, go hit the showers early, buddy. We'll see you.
Right.
It's not suspension level, in my opinion, but I mean, I have no idea what the people of player safety deem suspension worthy and not suspension worthy, or how many games they should give. It seems like it's fucking completely arbitrary to me. Like, they just spin the wheel of fortune and they're like, oh, bankrupt, you get fucking 10 games. And then this other guy, you know, yeah, this other guy, you know, gives somebody a slight push from behind and he gets a boarding, and then they give him, you know, 5 games, or they give him $5,000. Like, it's just all over the place. It's completely arbitrary what the decisions are from team to team, from game to game, player to player. Yeah. It's all over the place. And I wish it was a little more consistent. I think that's really all anyone would ask for, is just be consistent with what you call and what you dole out as punishment.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's throwing darts. I don't know, or whatever the mood swings. You know, if someone's in a pissy mood, and I'm tired of player discipline, so you get 5 games, or we haven't had one in a while, so yeah, give him a fine. He's fine. You know, it just seems like that. It just seems like if you hit me at the wrong time, and I've had too much of this crap this last week, then I'm gonna just lay the smack down on you. And that's, you know. And the Hartman thing is definitely basically them saying, okay, Ryan, that's enough. That's enough from you. Like, that's it, before it escalates even further, which I'm okay with, but it's just such inconsistency in all of it. And some guys get treated differently and then other guys do. And then you can talk about the teams, which teams seem to get, you know, anytime anybody has an infraction against the Bruins, they get a fine at the most. Like, it just seems like nothing ever happens if something happens to a Bruins player. They just don't get suspended very, you know, very harshly or anything.
I mean, Boston also has gotten away with murder before. Not literally, right, but it feels like they've committed murder. And just like, Paros is like, oh, whatever, you guys are fine. Pass them on.
Right.
That.
Yeah. How's it going to go? Yeah. It's just, it's extremely inconsistent. You know who's very, very consistent is Austin Matthews, who's at 63 goals. Does he get to 70? He has 7 games remaining.
What?
Seven goals in 7 games?
I have the schedule pulled up, okay, and they play some pretty tough teams.
Okay.
The only two kind of not so tough teams are Montreal and Pittsburgh.
Okay.
But the rest, maybe New Jersey, but New Jersey isn't that bad. They're just having a down year, in my opinion. But like, you got Florida, Tampa. You got some pretty decent teams coming up. So Tampa shut him down to just 1 goal, but that's a goal per game for the rest of the season, maybe less.
I think he hits it, because I think he could score 4 or 5 against Pittsburgh.
Honestly, fair enough.
I think Pittsburgh.
Offensive inclination.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pittsburgh's kind of cashed it in. They're like, yeah. I mean, Crosby's trying, but I'm not sure the rest of the team is really.
In the last few games, you know, Devils, he had a goal. He had 2 goals against Florida, 1 goal against Tampa. Like, it seems like he's scoring against, you know, the good teams too.
Yeah, I mean, and those guys on the power play, and he can score. He can score a bunch. So I'm going to say he hits it. I'm going to say he hits it.
I say he comes just like 1 or 2 goals shy. Because, like, he can score, but he needs to get in a groove.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then again, you got that Pittsburgh team with Carlson on defense, the reigning Norris Trophy winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking back against it this season, and I don't see a goal, if you can believe it, against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Really? That means he's going to break out. It's time to break out against the Pens.
Goal against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Scored a shitload against Philadelphia. Oh, my God. At least 7, but
Pasternak does too. He lights up the Flyers.
Oh, he lights up the, and David Krejci used to as well.
Yeah,
lit up the Flyers like a lampshade. But I think he has a real chance. It'll be interesting to see if he plays all those games. I mean, do they give him a load management, you know, once or twice, or does it depend on whether or not he's at 68? Or whatever.
Oh yeah, he'll play. He wants it. He wants 70.
Yeah,
he'll go for it. 70.
You know for sure a player like that to do that in the modern era, because it was cool when he did 60, and then fucking Pasternak and McDavid do it the same or the next season.
Yeah, so is McGillney and Solani the last to get 70? Who's the last to get 70?
Well, it's a good question.
I think they both had 76, Solani and McGillney.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's been a 70 for a while, right?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so either.
70.
I think the last might have been the 90s.
It might be McGillney. 80s. Yeah. Wow. That's impressive. All right. Wild card race in the East. Flyers, Capitals, Red Wings. And there's, you know, maybe another team. Which team locks up the last Eastern Conference playoff spot? Pittsburgh's actually surging a little, although they're slightly behind. Who gets in?
I'm honestly going to say Detroit is the team that sneaks in.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with Flyers, Red Wings. Get in.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Detroit gets in. I don't think. I mean, Islanders have played one more game than Detroit, and are only up a point. So I feel like Detroit will sneak in there, and Philly, you know, they've lost five in a row, so that doesn't bode well for them. And they got some tough games.
That's probably why Torts is beside himself.
Yeah, and they have some tough games coming up. I'm not sure the Flyers stay in the playoff race. I think they may fall out of it because they just don't have enough. Like, he's gotten every ounce out of them, and they just don't have enough. I feel like, you know, the Islanders have some goaltending and some forward. You know, Washington's right there, so I feel like one of those teams will probably jump over the Flyers and get in. And I did look up the 70 goals, by the way, and it was McGillney and Solani, both in that 92-93 season, right. Both had 76. Yeah. McGillney did it in 77 games.
Oh.
Solani in 84 games. So, and before that, it was Brett Hull had 70 in 91-92. And before that, 86 in 90-91.
Brett Hull?
Yeah.
Wow, 86. Jeez.
Yeah.
So that's McGillney and, what was it, 93-94?
Nah, 92-93.
92-93, so yeah, 31 years ago.
McGillney and Solani both in that same year. And then before
McGillney.
Brett Hull in three straight years had 72, 86, and 70. So.
Holy fuck. Wow.
That's Adam Oates, right, in the mid-80s.
Yeah, it was late 80s, early 90s, 89, 90, 90, 91, and 91, 92.
Yeah, I think Oates was in there. Somewhere.
Yeah, I think Oates was still there then. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Oates, we were talking about college free agents. Colin Graf went to San Jose, Jackson Nelson, the Bruins. It was Jacob Quillen went to Toronto.
Yeah.
And in that talk, who are actually the any superstars that come in as college free agents? And Adam Oates is probably the all-timer at RPI.
RPI, yeah.
Yeah. And that's there's a list of some that really did come about and have really good careers. There's not a ton of them.
No.
But Adam Oates is definitely far and above the best college free agent signing ever as a Hall of Famer. So that'll do it for this episode of Inside the Rink podcast. We're back at it. We're back at it weekly. Next week we can do our playoff predictions probably.
Yeah, sounds good.
I think we'll be like a day away from the final of the season. So, but yeah, definitely get to insidetherink.com. You can get merchandise on there. You can get great articles, extensive hockey coverage, and other great podcasts. And we'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you.